Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. 7 years ago, immigration reform activist Tamar Jacoby came to Tulsa and appeared on this program, and at that time was cautiously optimistic that a comprehensive immigration bill could get through Congress. Well, we're still waiting 7 years later, and today she remains somewhat, if less, optimistic that some reform can occur, just not in a comprehensive way. Tamar Jacoby is one of the leading specialists on immigration reform and is the president of Immigration Works USA, a national federation of small business owners working to advance better immigration law in the country. She's the author of the book Someone Else's House, America's Unfinished Struggle for Integration, and the editor of Reinventing the Melting Pot, The New Immigrants and What It Means to Be an American, a collection of essays about immigrant integration. From 1989 to 2007, prior to starting her own NGO, she was a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Before that, a senior writer and justice editor for Newsweek, and earlier than that, a deputy editor of the New York Times op-ed page. Last week, she penned her own op-ed for the Los Angeles Times on the current politicized state of immigration reform. It was an article titled, "Obama Set the Immigration Trap and the GOP Walked In." She was a guest of the Tulsa Committee on Foreign Relations last week, and today she discusses her thoughts about that op-ed and the current status of immigration reform in the United States. Tamar Jacoby, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Over the past couple of years, I would describe you among the pro-immigration groups as a measured optimist. And over the last couple of years, when most people were saying there's no chance we're going to have immigration reform, you're saying, well, I think there's a possibility. There's a way forward. In the wake of the last few months where President Obama defers deportations through his executive orders, and now a federal judge in Texas that has put an injunction against the implementation of that, and a lawsuit is obviously going to go forward, and it's going to be several months or maybe even a year or more before we have a resolution to that. Are you still that measured optimist?
Sometimes I make fun of myself, and I say, every year for the past 10 years, I've been saying this year, so why would you listen to me? So you're right. Part of what you have to be in politics is you have to think that you're getting to your goal. We're at a low point. I'll say that. We're at a low point. I think there's still some pressure on Republicans between now and 2016 to show they can do something, that they can govern at some level. So I think it's possible, maybe, woulda, coulda, shoulda, that they'll do some small steps. Will they do what we've been waiting for 10 years? No. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can we get off the dime at all in the next couple of years before the presidential election? And I think there's still potentially some chance of that when the dust clears.
Now, you've laid a lot of the blame in your most recent op-ed on the president. You feel like he's using immigration as a wedge issue, and this whole executive order was just widening that wedge.
Well, I'll put my cards on the table. I'm a pro-reform Republican, right? And I've been a pro-reform Republican before there almost were any. I remember the days when we could have a meeting and a phone booth was too big. Somebody once said to me, do you know any pro-reform Republicans? I said, I know all the pro-reform Republicans. So I have a bias. But I think both sides are to blame for the impasse. There's no question about that. I mean, Washington is broken and everybody is part of the, what somebody said about the latest debate, we're meeting immaturity with more immaturity. And there's plenty of that. Both sides are kind of in the sandbox and playing by sandbox rules. But I think it's a little easier to see it with Republicans. So sometimes you have to point it out about Democrats. And the paradox is Republicans have come a long way that they don't get credit for. They're still not able to do it, so you got to be critical, but they have come a long way.
And you were able to get an immigration bill through the Senate in the last Congress.
And even Republicans in the House, 2012 was a big turning point. The presidential election of 2012, when Latinos really, more or less decided a few Latinos in a few swing states, just because of where they were, more or less decided the election. A lot of Republicans have realized we're never going to see the inside of the White House if we don't look like we're part of the solution on this. And I've watched an evolution in the House that's really from the bottom up. For 2 years, you'd meet Republican members, and you could almost see the wheels turning in their head. We got to be for something, and what would it be, and how do I get my arms around this, and what can I be for and still be for the rule of law and all the things I care about? And I think they were getting toward an answer. I mean, a couple of leading Republican reformers did a whip count, what they call a whip count, last June, and they found more than half of Republicans willing to vote not for a path to citizenship, no citizenship, but perhaps legal status for unauthorized immigrants. So that was a big, big step. But then you come back to the big political dynamic, which is jammed movement. Republicans don't want to do anything that gives a victory to a Democratic president. Democrats are now starting to use it as a wedge issue. There's been a lot of change on the ground, but there's a big political dynamic that's working against us.
Now, your recent op-ed that you wrote, you said you really felt like this executive order was a wedge issue that basically would gum up the works for any hope of seeing immigration reform. Now, as a Republican, you said this was a trap that Obama set for the Republicans, and they happily stepped into it.
Well, exactly. I mean, if the president had said, so look, I think it's the right thing to do. Let's get that straight. On the substance, legal status for unauthorized immigrants, legal status for more Dreamers. I think that's absolutely part of reform, has to happen. I think legal status is actually a halfway step. It's a moderate version of it. The full bore of citizenship and legal status for some unauthorized immigrants is a pretty modest way to go about it. And the irony is if President Obama had sent that as a bill to the House, Republican House of Representatives last year, I think they would have struggled with it and they might have passed it.
Really?
Legal status for some of the unauthorized immigrants. Maybe they would have shaved off a million, you know, but if he'd come with an honest say, like, here's the compromise. But he didn't do that. He said, you have to pass the Senate bill or nothing. And they weren't going to pass the Senate bill. The Senate bill was citizenship and it was for everyone and it was his demand. But if he'd come and said, come on, let's compromise. How about this? How about legal status for half of them or a third of them? I think Republicans would have had a hard time. And in the end, the reformers might have prevailed among Republicans. But he didn't do that.
Yeah. You mentioned the whip count, though, that said that over half the Republicans in the House were
ready to take a vote on that and for it.
So why didn't they?
Well, because at that point it looked like they were giving something to Democrats. And then the timing was also very unfortunate. That whip count was finished literally the week that Majority Leader Eric Cantor lost his primary race and that the Central American kids were coming over the border. But that was part of it. The thing that was really stopped them was we don't want to give a victory to this president given the way he's handled the relationships between us and given that we don't trust him to enforce it. But if he'd come hat in hand, in quiet, not brinksmanship, negotiating in public, if he'd come to Boehner and said, come on, let's go behind the scenes, let's talk this out, I'll come halfway, you come halfway, we'll have enforcement up the wazoo, I think it would have had a chance. I really do. And the point is, Republicans were difficult. They were standing there with their arms folded across their chest. But I think the president also, you know, he got a lot of mileage out of grandstanding and saying, you racist Republicans. And, you know, that paid off at the polls. And then what he did, finally, we did this compromise. He did it by himself in a way he knew would infuriate them. He knew they would have no choice but to stand up and their heads explode in public and, you know, get angry and carry on. And that they would look, instead of looking like they were angry at the abuse of authority, which is, I think, what they're really angry at, they would look like they hate immigrants. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they, you know, he did it. Their heads exploded in public. They screamed and carry on. They said, we hate this. They said, this is an abuse of authority. But the public doesn't really hear abuse of authority. Most of the public hears, you don't like immigrants and you don't want any immigrants. And that's going to play out in the election after election, I'm afraid.
Now, let me get back to your point that if there'd been private negotiations, you know, I will say from the Democratic point of view, from a Democrat who's listening to this says, the administration has had tons of negotiations on every issue from trying to save the world in 2009 when you know, the markets were going down the tubes through the whole presidency. None of those negotiations.
Yeah, that's not how it looks in what it looks like in, from the certainly the Republican side.
And I know,
from many,
I know.
And from many Democrats in Congress is that the president likes to do it the president's way. And he doesn't much care about Congress. And he thinks Congress are small-minded, posturing people who have to get elected so often that they don't really have the country's interest at heart. And even on some occasions where Congress did pass something, but he was working on his own thing separately, usually he kind of poo-poos the Congress thing and trumpets his own. And often he goes his own way. So, I mean, obviously there's two sides to that story.
There's two sides,
but,
and both sides look at the other side as unwilling to overcome.
Compared to Bill Clinton, you know, this isn't just partisan for me. I mean, compare him to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton knew how to negotiate with Congress, and he knew how to play Congress, and he knew how to give them what they needed and take what he needed. Obama doesn't really play that way.
I think a lot of it has to do with just the national electoral politics, because when you look at presidential election years, the country as a whole is fairly a moderately Democrat. Off-year elections, they're moderately Republican.
Right.
And I think compromise is pretty difficult because you can just look to the next election cycle and say, I'm going to have a built-in advantage.
Next time.
And it just gives up the work.
But in the past, presidents were much better at this, right? I mean, we've been getting, if you chart it over time, I think we've been getting steadily, it's not steadily worse. I mean, I think in general it's worse. I mean, look at Eisenhower and then look, you know, coming since. And I think one of the big questions is, how much does this have to do with presidential leadership? But sometimes you get a guy who's good at it. Again, Clinton was pretty off the charts good at it. So the question is, how much does the current impasse have to do with the particular president, and how much does it have to do with other things going on to polarize the country? The way, you know, we don't, nobody reads the same newspaper anymore or watches the same TV station. Right. You only read the stuff you agree with or watch the people you agree with, and the way the gerrymandering works so that the districts are so, you know, Republican safe districts and Democrat safe districts. So there's a lot of things that have nothing to do with the people in Washington that's made it more polarized. But part of it, I believe, is the people in Washington. And I think President Obama, and again, I recognize I've got a bias here, but I think President Obama, even compared to President Clinton, is pretty off the chart. My way or the highway, I'm going to do it my way, I'm going to get it done, I'm a great guy, Congress are small-minded.
I would say your Obama supporter would say that the Congress is far more or less, and it's just, you just keep going on.
Yeah.
But let's get back to immigration for a second, and that gets, you said that really a comprehensive bill is probably not in the works. There's too many places to hide things in there. That Congress
too big to get through the door. I mean, in the wake of Obamacare, I don't think anything comprehensive is going to pass, and not certainly not on immigration.
So what are the first steps?
Well, so there have always been three parts of immigration reform, right? Three pillars. One is some answer for the people already here. And you can we're not going to deport them. They're not going to self-deport. We figured that out. Got to come up with some answer for them. Is it citizenship? Is it legal status? Is it just for dreamers? Is it for all of them? I don't think we're going to touch that in the next 2 years. I think because of the way the president's acted, and Republicans are going to see that as giving in to the president, I think that's probably off the table for now. The second part is enforcement, border enforcement and enforcement in the workplace. And I think there's a good chance that they're going to do that, right?
Well, I was just looking over the last 6 years. It's all been about border enforcement, building walls.
Well, but they could also do mandatory E-Verify, right? That's the thing in the workplace where the employer checks the employee against a database and real time gets an answer, is he legal, is he not, or is she, and then, you know, decides not to hire him. I think that may happen. So the third piece, the big question mark in my mind, which is, will they do this, will they not do it, is some fixes to the legal immigration system that make it work better, both for high-skilled professional workers, but also for less-skilled workers. Can we fix, that would be a way for Republicans to say, we're fixing the legal immigration system. This has nothing to do with people who broke the law. We're just fixing the legal immigration system. We're showing that we know immigrants contribute something positive and that they're good for America, especially if they come legally. And we're going to make some of those rules a little easier and provide some workers in places where, you know, for example, meat processing or kitchens or whatever, can get some legal workers so they don't have to hire illegal workers. We think that's part of the solution.
You know, but I when I hear that, when I think of the legal system, I'm thinking about the highly technical professional employees.
Well, they did it for both.
Yeah, I know that. But where I hear the agreement is on those highly skilled workers, I still don't hear a lot of agreement. And you look at various states like Alabama and places where they really did crack down. They shot themselves in the foot,
right?
Yeah, I mean.
But so my hope is, my little secret hope here, it's not so secret, I'm talking about on the radio, but that they might be convinced to try a small experiment with less skilled workers. So don't do it for the whole country. That's too big a change in a year like this. But could they have a pilot program in places where we have full employment? That would be a way to test it, and then you would see, did it actually send American, did it do it, you know, in places where they really can't find any more workers and all the Americans are working, does it hurt American wages? Does it actually reduce illegal immigration? What are the consequences? So you do a small experiment and you test it for a while. I would consider that a big victory if we could do that this year.
It seems like the enforcement of say, the E-Verify, that has to go hand in hand with the guest worker program because...
Otherwise, what happens to the employers?
Yeah, I think there have been some agreements on general agreements that we have really to enforce our E-Verify system and a verification system. But without guest workers, you just have too many industries in this country that would fruit and vegetables in the field, meatpacking, lots of industries.
That's the hope, is that they'll understand that. And you know, maybe it's easier to be pessimistic about Washington than optimistic. The pessimists are going to win every time. So, you know, it's possible they just won't do anything, and it's possible that they can't even do E-Verify because of what you say, they can't get anywhere. But I think if the impetus to do E-Verify is strong enough, it might pull along the need to do something a little more positive. Small steps. We're talking small steps, but we're talking at least break this impasse.
My guest today is Tamara Jacoby. She's president and CEO of Immigration Works USA, which is a national federation of small business owners working to advance better immigration law. She's pro-immigration proponent. She was a guest of the Tulsa Committee on Foreign Relations. Now, is that the biggest thing your group is looking at, is E-Verify, because of so many small businesses that do depend on?
Well, I think the biggest thing we're looking at is hope for this experimental pilot program. That's our biggest hope, that we could, because I think that's the thing that's always been missing, right? There's a program for PhD scientists. It's not big enough. It's not good enough. H-1B, it's too much red tape, but at least there's a program. If you're a PhD scientist and you want to come here, you can apply, and eventually you get a visa. It costs you a fair amount of money with lawyers. If you're a farm worker, there's actually a program for you. You can come and work seasonally. Again, way too much red tape. Government people brought you to the post office, but at least there's a program. If you're a Mexican who wants to work year-round, not at a seasonal job, but a year-round low-skill job, if you have no family here, you have one big choice. You can hire a smuggler and walk across the desert, or you can hire a smuggler and walk across the desert. There's no other way to do it. There's no program for you. There's no line. If you have family, you can get in line and wait 10, 15 years. You know, by then you're an old man. It's a little hard to work as a busboy 15 years later, but you can wait in that line. If you have no family here, you have no way to get here. And all we're saying is, create a program so that the people who are now coming illegally can come legally instead. That's what we've always been saying. And we used to say, create a program so it could be big enough for the whole country. Now we're saying in this difficult year, okay, forget the whole country. Forget wall-to-wall carpet. Let's try just a little experiment with a little area rug and see if we can make that work.
Now, as far as the people who are already here, the Dreamers, you know, this executive order would really exempt them from being deported. It's hard to see what's going to happen, but it depends on what you read, whether this legal decision in Texas was, you know, it's going to hold up in right. Further courts. I mean, I think when you read liberal sources, they say, no, this is going to be thrown out, the Court of Appeals. Conservatives say exactly the opposite. What is your best assessment of what's going to happen with the executive order?
I can't predict the judicial system. I think it could end up in the Supreme Court. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's quite possible. And, you know, then who knows? And what kind of pressures that creates, now we're playing.
And it's really no longer about immigration. It's really about presidential powers and congressional powers.
Exactly. Except, again, the problem is to Latinos, it doesn't, you know, yes, it's about presidential, but it feels like it's about you. So mm-hmm. from the point of view of Republicans for the future for the Latino vote, you know, the perception, one side is going to see one kind of argument, but the other side is going to say it doesn't really matter what they're saying. What they mean is they don't like us. That's the problem for Republicans. And, you know, again, everyone knows that's the fastest growing voting bloc. They're in the swing states. If they think we don't like them, it's not going to go well for us in the future. You know, it's really not.
That was the takeaway from 2012, too.
Right.
I mean, really, that was, I've heard so many Republicans say, we have to do something on immigration reform. And yet they couldn't.
Well,
and I think in your op-ed, you referred to the noisy nativist minority. And really, I mean, this is like the Rush Limbaughs of the world who are always going to denounce any Republican that stands up and says, we have to have immigration reform. And there's not been a real spine to do that.
But you see, that's where the balance has shifted in the last 2 years. Those naysayers used to really, if they didn't speak for the majority of the party, they really did effectively control them. Because if you ever stuck your head above the trench line and said different, they could really kill you. Over those past 2 years, those guys have at times looked very marginalized. You know, there was a time when Boehner criticized Representative Steve King in the media and in public and made fun of him. And a lot of members started to think that's a marginal extremist. The problem is this fight, this political fight over authority has empowered those guys again and given them the reins again. But they're still, you know, your average Republican member of Congress, if you talk to him and you say, do we have to have immigration reform, they're going to say, of course. And if you say, do we have to do something for the 11 million, they're going to say, yeah. And they're not going to say, I want to do it, I want to step up and do it this year. It's a little bit like going to the dentist. It's like, you know I have to do it someday. Let's see if we can put it off. I'll go eventually. But they mostly get that they have to do it. But in these bad times, in a crisis, the bad guys get the naysayers get empowered again. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, I know it's silly to be unrealistically optimistic, right? You got to look at the reality. And we're in a very bad time now. But I think that one thing we do have going for us is the sense of the eventual politics of it, the Latino vote. You know, we got to get on the right side of this at some point. And there has been the sea change in the party. It's that, you know, can that have a chance to come up from underneath the surface.
I just look at our new congressmen here in Oklahoma, and they're I don't see them as being part of that sea change.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't want to name any names.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying, you know, we have a lot of new Republican congressmen. I mean, the balance in the House of Representatives is a little more lopsided than it's been in the last sort of switchbacks and forth. And I just, from what I see of those freshmen, it's all about enforcement, and it's not about anything about certainly no path to citizenship. And, you know,
but nobody's campaigning on this, right? See, no one's going to be for it until it's almost about to happen, right? And everybody else is for it. But you'd be very surprised. I mean, we spend a lot of time with members talking to them, you know, quietly. I mean, I sometimes joke my job is to introduce members to their constituents. So, you know, what, a lot of what we do is bring businesses, small businesses, to talk to their members about their labor needs. And you would be surprised. Some of the most fire-breathing people say, yeah, of course we get it. We have to fix this eventually. Now, again, the 11 million who are already here is the hardest part. A lot of them do get, well, fix this to the legal system maybe has to come first. But a lot of them get, you got to do something about those 11 million. And they tear their hair. And again, you see the struggle and they try to get to an answer. But a lot of them have gotten to the answer of, we've got to do something for them. And this path to legal status, as differentiated from citizenship, is a kind of place that, at least last year, was a kind of consensual view among a lot
of people. So would it be a version of the green card, but there would be no path
to
citizenship, so you couldn't stay 5 years?
The idea is you wouldn't be barred from citizenship ever, but you'd have to get in another existing line. So if your employer was willing to support you for citizenship, you could go that way. If your family was willing to support you for citizenship, you could go that way. But we weren't going to create a law that just put you on a conveyor belt from unauthorized to citizenship without having passed go and getting a special favor.
So you're here for five years.
Well, you're here for indefinitely. Yeah. Working, legal, come back and forth, you know, whatever. But no vote, no juries, no benefits of citizenship. But not barred from it, just we're not going to give it to you as a favor just because you showed up illegally. You know, it's not the perfect answer. I don't want to live in a society that has two different categories of residents. You know, that's America. We have a bad history
with that.
Is that
a fear with this? Is that a legitimate fear from some pro-immigration?
I think if you could get to the path to legal status, I would take path to legal status because I think once you're on that slippery slope, you know, eventually a lot of people will get to citizenship. For one reason, a lot of people have kids who were, I mean, this is what we're arguing about this week.
That's right.
Kids
parents,
who were born here, yeah, who can get them on the, and that's another winner.
And the older sibling who's subject to deportation.
Right. But, I mean, there are 4 million kids like that, 4.5 million kids like that. So that would get a lot of the 11 million in. And a lot of them might, you know, maybe would be happy. They don't need to be citizens. You know, last time we had a legalization in 1986, less than 40% actually signed up for citizenship. So, you know, I think a path to legal status wouldn't be ideal in my view, but it'd be pretty good. You know, right now that looks like a pretty good mark.
So taking the pulse of the current Congress, Republican majorities in each, any sense that they're ready to move forward with that?
I think, you know, I think...
Or are they waiting to see?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen in the next couple
years. I think they're waiting to see what happens in 2016, really.
Well, but see, 2016 is going to, you know, it's not going to get that much easier. That's the problem, right? So, first of all, there's going to be the whole debate between now and then, and this is a drag on the Republican nominee, right? I mean, as long as this is a hot debated issue, it is not going to be good for, you know.
I would think that the Republican nominee would have to say no path to citizenship and no immigration
reform. Jeb is on record, right, as being for at least a path to legal status.
Of course, we haven't any votes yet.
that's the problem is going into the campaign with this still an unresolved issue. That's really bad for us. But, I mean, let's just pretend we could fast forward. First of all, a Democrat president, I don't know that they're going to have, if you still have the hard right in the House, you know, unless that president can really prove, unless he's Bill Clinton on steroids in the sense of proving that he can negotiate with the House, going to be hard to find the compromise. Republican president, maybe a little better chance. You know, George Bush had a pretty, you know, got closer than we've gotten in a long time. But even there, you know, he's going to have obstacles too. I mean, Democrats are, you know, there'd be a better chance to divide a government to get to a compromise. But now the Democrat advocates aren't going to want to compromise. So I'm just not sure it's going to get that much easier in 2016.
So why are you optimistic?
Well, I mean, again, I think the main thing that has to happen is, you know, the best thing that could happen is some small steps now.
So what would be a first step? Comprehensive reform is not going to happen, but you could see the House, this may have been a year or two or more ago, you said, I could see the House taking every step of the comprehensive bill, but in single bills, that would have to be cobbled together.
Yeah, that was a while ago. So I don't. In the wake of the presidential order and the fight over it, it's hard for me to see Republicans wanting to touch the legal status piece. I think what you might see this year is a reform bill that they attach some small fixes for the legal immigration system. So, you know, very small steps, right? This is very small steps.
So you fix the professional.
And again, maybe you have this experimental pilot program for the others. At least Republicans can say, and then probably the president vetoes it, right? Or at least the pressure's on him, right?
It would be on him because it's a small victory, would be a victory.
Yeah. And obviously that doesn't get us all the way, but at least it gets a little bit of momentum, and it's good for Republicans because it shows they can solve some things. They like some immigrants, you know, legal immigrants. It would be a small, you know, small steps. Sometimes when you're really stuck, small steps are better than no steps, and they get something going. You know, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm dreaming. And you know, obviously this has been a really bad few weeks, and we're at a very bad point now. But the one thing I've learned in politics is, you know,
it can change very quickly. Yeah. Well, it'll be really interesting to see because, you know, there are still voices in Congress that are talking about mass deportations.
I don't think too many serious voices, honestly, I'll tell you. I think
you're a congressman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a few who are obviously, I mean, we don't have to name them, but there's a few who really think you can do that. Most realize you can't do that. I spent a lot of time with those guys. I mean, they're Washington's broken, but most of them go there to solve problems. I mean, these are people who could do lots of other things in American life and make a lot more money, and there are not too many people who go and say, let's go and hold on to a stalemate, you know? And most of them, I think, this is an issue where a lot of them say, I'd like to see progress on this. And I think if they could find a small way out where they could make some progress, they might take it.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. But you think until the legal status of the executive order is resolved, we're not going to see anything.
No, I think that's probably right.
Well, how's that vote for 2016? Your op-ed said, you know, Obama set the trap with the executive order. The Republicans jumped into the trap. Does this mean that you're not going to see much Latino support?
Well, again,
support
you just
for
don't know. You
Hispanic,
don't know what
Republicans.
You don't know. I think 2016 is a long way away. You know, a lot will depend on how fast this case moves through the courts. I think if it looks like it's going to take a long time, again, Republicans may just say, okay, it's going to take a long time. We're going to back off now. But they may say, this gives us a chance to get out of the hole we're in and figure out some way to start to climb out.
I would think from a political strategy, some measure getting through Congress would be a smart step before this is resolved because
exactly.
At least you're taking a proactive step.
Exactly.
If there is the support that you say you feel like there is because, you know, it just doesn't seem that way from a distance.
From far, I get that. No, I get that.
I get a sense that, and you said I was a pessimist, and I probably am, but I get a sense that when our attention is elsewhere off of immigration,
it moves better.
But as soon as, you know, this whole attack machine that operates on both sides, but especially on the conservative side, I just think it's pretty hard for a lot of Republicans to stand up to that when it's going full bore.
But there's the other pressure of 2016 is coming. A year ago, it might have looked hard to win the White House. Now people think we could win the White House. Mm-hmm. It's going to be awful hard to win the White House if Latinos hate us. So, you know, and there's going to be voices like Jeb and others who are going to be saying, who have the bully pulpit, who are going to be saying, you got to make some progress on this.
Tamar Jacoby, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Immigration reform proponent Tamar Jacoby speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's the president and CEO of the Immigration Works USA. She was speaking to the Tulsa Committee on Foreign Relations last week on immigration reform. Is there a way out of the impasse? For more information on the Tulsa Committee on Foreign Relations, visit tulsacfr.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.